let's get into the message. I'm going to challenge you this morning, and I hope you still like me at the end of the service. And if you didn't like me at the start, well, I've lost nothing. So, why don't you give a big hand too? Where's Troy? Troy was on drums for the first time this morning. Well done, Troy. Fantastic. Second time, was it? He snuck through. He snuck through once before. I didn't see. I don't know. He must have looked like somebody else. Have you ever found yourself in a situation where you're trying to find the middle ground? You know, where you've got perhaps, you know, you've got things coming from this side, you've got things coming from that side, you've got someone over here with this opinion and these attitudes and these needs, and you've got someone over here trying to, you know, with their agendas coming in here, and you find yourself trying to walk down the middle and trying to find the middle ground. Have you ever been in that situation? And you know, sometimes you find yourself trying to mediate, or you find yourself the negotiator between two different passionate positions. Parents, I guess you do that regularly, where you find yourself in the middle and you're trying to find some middle ground. You're trying to find something that will keep everybody happy. My question is, does that place exist? Does the middle ground actually exist? Is there such thing as middle ground? Is there such thing as the position where everybody is happy? Have you tried to find that place where there is harmony, where everybody's point of view is understood, that position between two poles? I'll ask again, do you think that exists? It's all right, it's a rhetorical question. You don't have to put your hand up or anything like that. But I guess in a lot of ways, well, it sort of does. You know, we live life where we balance. We live in the balance between, you know, opposing tensions and things like that. We try to live in that place. Sometimes, you know, we feel like we're managing those things okay. Sometimes we feel like we're sort of managing all these different tensions and things that come in our lives. Other times, it feels like it's not manageable. Sometimes we feel like we're perhaps a balloon, you know, when you've got a balloon in a group of people and it's being smacked around from place to place, and it just goes from whoever put the energy into it last by hitting it with their hand. And sometimes life can feel a little bit like that. It can feel like, well, you know, where is the middle ground? But I feel like, I'm hit over here and somebody's got this and they need that done now, and their thing is so important. You feel like you're whack over there, and then then bang, bang, bang. And that's sometimes how life can feel. But is there such thing as the middle ground? Is there such thing as that place? Yesterday, my wife, who has become a big biker, she's got a 125 scooter, Piaggio, and she decided she'd go in the toy run with some other people, with some of the guys here that ride bikes, and so she rode along with Ed on his on his big Yamaha, with Tess on the back, and my brother Andrew on his Harley, and you know, they're all riding down there, and there's Alex on his scooter. Anyway, they rang me up and said, look. We come down and join us, you know, and have a drink afterwards and all that. So we're down there and we're wandering around, and it's real eye candy for people that are into motorbikes, and we're looking at the different bikes and things. And I'm talking to a good friend of mine, and he says actually I've got a nice bike, but maybe I could sort of see, perhaps I'd like to have another one. Because my bike, you know, it's good for this and it's good for that, but you know, I'd like a cruiser because, you know, at times when you just want to go out for a Sunday afternoon ride, you know, I just like a cruiser. And you know, that may seem a little extravagant, but I said, yeah, well, I understand. I know exactly where you're coming from. Because have you noticed that when you get something that is a compromise, something that is not, you know, it's not designed for a specific purpose, but it's designed to do a whole lot of things, you know, you find that it doesn't actually do anything that well. I can remember as a kid, I was I'll stay with this motorbike theme just for a sec, and I was into dirt bikes, and that was fantastic. And then when I started to get my license to ride on the road, I bought a bike that was sort of a dirt bike, road bike, what they call a road trail bike, they used to call them back then. And to me, they were good at nothing. They weren't that good in the bush, and they weren't that good on the road, and they were just a complete compromise. If you're into boating or something like that, sometimes you'll try and buy a boat that does a whole lot of things. You know, you can go skiing with it, you can go fishing with it, and that's all cool if you're not that serious about fishing and you're not that serious about skiing. But if you're serious about skiing, you want a ski boat. If you're serious about fishing, you want a fishing boat. And there's a whole lot of things, in life that are like that, that if you actually want something that will do the job well, you actually want the thing that is specifically designed for that thing. But often when you find yourself in the middle ground trying to find something that does everything, perhaps it actually does nothing that well. Do you understand where I'm coming from, what I'm looking at? I could go on and use example after example of those sorts of things, but for some reason in society, we find ourselves looking for the middle ground. We have middle-of-the-road music. It's not too loud, it's not too full-on, it's not that provocative, and it sort of tries to be nice, but at the end of the day, you listen to it, and you can't remember a whole lot about it. It just played away in the background, middle-of-the-road music. Or you hear people talking about middle-aged people. Can't see any here. They're not that old, but they're not that young. And it's all about perspective. I remember when I was young, middle-aged people were old. Now that I'm not so young, middle-aged people, perhaps they're young. And it is absolutely all about perspective. But you know what? The meaning of middle of the road that I found out when I was researching this, well, this is one meaning anyway. You could probably put anything you like on it, but it said, I like this, it says something unadventurous or inoffensive, opting to go neither one way or the other. The middle of the road, the middle ground, if you like, is something that is unadventurous, it is inoffensive, and it's opting to go, not to go either way. It doesn't go one way or the other. And the reality is I'm all for finding balance in life. If we get too far out on one edge or we focus on too much on a particular area of our life and we ignore something else, for instance, your professional life, it might be absolutely bombing. You might be getting promotion, you might be getting satisfaction from that, it might be going ahead, but your family life mightn't be happening so well. And life is about actually managing those tensions and perhaps moving the balance point to where we find ourselves. But I'm not really so much talking about that this morning. I'm talking about the fact that if life is all about just finding the middle ground, if it's all about being in the middle of the road, you know what I reckon? I reckon that this description is really good. That you will actually live an unadventurous and inoffensive life, opting to go neither way. And who wants to live that sort of life? Who wants to live, maybe you don't want to be offensive, but who wants to live an unadventurous life? Who wants to live a life where there is not much happening? Who wants to live a life where there is not much excitement, there is not much to get up for in the morning, there is nothing happening? Sometimes we can spend all our not life trying to find the middle ground, trying to get ourselves in the middle position, that we become totally unadventurous, we become totally boring, we become inoffensive, and where do we become? We become almost nothing. Describe that person. Well, they're just sort of, middle of the road sort of person. They're not really this and they're not really that. And, what are they? I reckon society often tries to make you like that. Because we get all these conflicting views, you get this and you get that, and we get told how we should act and how we should be and what we should wear and all those things. So we become unadventurous, we become boring, and we become inoffensive. In other words, we're not having any impact at all on anybody. We're just there. We're just existing. Last week, we started our new series called Choose Life, and the key verse for this series is Deuteronomy 30, verse 19. It says this, it says, "Today I have given you the choice between life and death, between blessings and curses. Now I call on heaven and earth to witness the choice you make. Oh, that you would choose life so that your descendants might live." In that verse, I think, we spoke about this last week, but I want to take a different angle here this morning. That word today is perhaps the important word. That is the word for us this morning, today. Not tomorrow, not the next day, not next year. Why am I talking about next year today? Because if we want to make a difference, we want to make an impact next year, it happens with the choices we make right now. It happens with what we put in place right now. It happens with the things that we choose to do. So today, I have given you the choice between life and death, blessings and curses. Now I call on heaven and earth as witnesses for the choice you make. And then as this was written by Moses, you just hear the heart of God expressed here. Oh, that you would choose life. Why? So that you and your descendants might live. So that there will be life for your life now. So that there will be life for your family in the future. So there will be life across this city. So that there will be life wherever we're involved. You see, our choices are much bigger than us. You see, society has a way of telling you that your choices are just about you, you know, in the I generation. You know, you choose everything that makes your personal life just right. You do all those things, but the reality is the choices you make, they don't only affect you. They affect you, they affect your family, they affect your kids, they affect people across this city, they affect the descendants, they affect the people that are to come. Today is the important word. What God is saying through Moses is today you have a choice. Today you have the power to choose. Today you have the power to choose. Listen to verse 11. If you want to go back a couple of verses, it says, "This command I'm giving you today," and once again, in the present. You see, that's why God's always doing a new thing. When you pick up the Word of God, don't read it in the past. Don't read it as history. Don't read it as ancient stories. Read it as now. Because the Word of God is living, it's alive, it's inspired by the Spirit, and it's now. It's the now Word of God. So he says, "This command I am giving you today is not too difficult for you to understand." That's good for some of us here. "And it's not beyond your reach. No, it's not kept in heaven so distant that you must ask, 'Who is going to go up to heaven and bring it down so I can hear it and obey?' It is not beyond the sea so far away that you must ask, 'Who will cross the sea and bring it to us that we can hear it and obey?' No, the message is very close at hand. It's on your lips, it's on your heart, so that you can obey it. Now," in verse 15 where we started, "now listen today." Today we can choose. What it's saying is it's not beyond your reach. It's not a secret thing that you can't find. It's close at hand. It's on your heart and it's on your lips. And when this was written, it was basically the law of Moses. And it was written not to people who had no idea about God. It was written to people who were familiar with God. It was written to people who had experienced their parents or some of them themselves had actually seen the Red Sea part and had gone through. They had seen God actually deliver them from Egypt. They had seen a cloud that led them around the wilderness. They had seen God provide for them every single day with food from heaven. They had seen all this amazing stuff. So this wasn't written to people that had no idea about God. This was written to people who were familiar with Him. This was written to people who actually talked about it. It was imprinted into their lives. It was on their heart. It was on their lips. They spoke about it. But then this verse actually goes, well, that's not enough. Today you need to make a choice. You need to choose. You need to either decide you're going to choose life, you're going to choose all that comes with life, or you're not going to choose, and in which case you choose anyway, so you choose death. Yeah. And what he was saying is when you choose life, you choose something that's bigger than yourself, you choose a purpose beyond yourself, you choose something that is going somewhere, but when you don't choose, you actually tend to choose all about your world, and your life gets smaller and smaller and smaller, and it spirals down till it closes up. And I've seen this happen so many times. I've seen people that have made choices where they've been serving God. God has been using them in an amazing way. And then they start to make choices which looking back in hindsight, are perhaps not good choices. They've had amazing influence in the kingdom. They've been part of a church. And under that covering, God has been using them and things have been happening in their world. And they make a choice that is all about them, and suddenly their world gets smaller, it gets smaller, it's smaller, their influence gets less and less and less, and maybe they don't die physically, but their influence has died, their purpose has died, and what is going on in their world has died. And if we go down that track, it says eventually that leads to death. That's the choice that we've got to make. When? Today. It's not about somebody else. It's about me. It's about you. I'm speaking to myself. I'm speaking to individuals here this morning. And the influence that we have as a church actually happens through the collective choices of individuals. You see, we can put things in place as a leadership. We can speak vision. We can have all sorts of things that we're wanting to see. But our impact, the influence we have across this city, the influence that we have with people that need to know about the love of Jesus Christ, the influence that we can have in Hobart, the influence that we can have across this state of Tasmania, the influence that we can have in Nepal, the influence that we can have in China, the influence that we can have in Malaysia, we've got people going to all those places. It actually happens through the collective individual choices. That when we as individuals decide to choose life, and we decide to choose to be part of something that's bigger than us, God is going to do amazing things. That's why I think God is saying, I'm doing a new thing. I think there's breakthrough for this church. I'm going to keep some of my powder dry, but I'm excited about next year, and we've got a fantastic theme as we go into next year, and I think we're going to see all sorts of things actually happen and unfold. But you know what I believe? I believe before that can happen, today, right now, we've got to choose. We've got to choose life. We've got to decide that we choose life. We've got to decide that we're going to choose that we're perhaps not happy trying to find the middle ground. That we're not happy trying to live a middle-of-the-road sort of life. A life where, you know, it's basically boring, unadventurous, and inoffensive. And I'm not asking you to go out and be offensive, but sometimes we get so worried about being inoffensive that we stand for nothing. We absolutely stand for nothing. So we've got to decide today to choose life. His word for us this morning is choose life. You know, the power to choose has not been taken away from you. That has not been taken from you. And these verses are used again in Romans 10:8-10. It says, in fact, the message is very close at hand. It's on your lips, it's in your heart, and the message is the very message of faith that we preach. In other words, you're not having to go looking for it. We're preaching that every single week in church. It's actually happening in our life groups. It's happening as you pick up the Word of God. You're not actually needing to go and look for some amazing revelation that's way out there. The message is actually in your heart. You know the answers. It's actually about the choice. It's about choosing to choose life. It's about deciding that you will choose life. And we know we're like the people, children of Israel. The message is here. It's all around us. It's inside us. We know what it can do for us. We know the truth. What the truth has done in our lives. We know what it can do for other people. And it's not that people need a degree in theology to know how to choose. It's not about searching for a new answer. It's about deciding to choose. Because that choice isn't for you. As we've already said, it's actually for your family. It's for your workplace, it's for your high school, it's for your university, it's for people right across this city when you decide to choose life. Oh, that they would choose life so that their descendants might live. But, the big but, if we live in the middle of the road, we don't choose and we allow situations, we allow circumstances and we allow people and we allow the pressure of life to choose for us. We end up being, you could just about answer this by now, boring, unadventurous, and inoffensive. Romans goes on, it says, if we confess with your mouth that Jesus Christ is Lord, and you believe with your heart that God raised him from the dead, you will be saved. For it is by believing in your heart that you are made right with God, and it is by confessing with your mouth that you are saved. You see, we perhaps get this when we're introducing somebody to the kingdom, and we talk about this is actually how you find Jesus, and I'm all for that. We must be speaking that, and we must be explaining that to people. But we've actually got to make that new for us every single day. We've got to decide that we confess with our mouth that Jesus is Lord, that we do it every single day. We do it over our circumstances. We do it when things are against us. We do it when we're not having a great day. We do it when we feel shocking in the morning. We do it when we're having a fantastic day. And that we confess with our mouth that you're saved. And you see, salvation, like God, God's not static, God hasn't stopped. Salvation actually isn't just a one-time decision. You see, if there's probably something that the evangelical church maybe unintentionally has brought in, that's that, you know, you put your hand up and you pray a sinner's prayer and you're saved. And you'll hear me talk about that every single week when we give people the opportunity to come into the kingdom, that a miracle can happen in your life right there and then. But it's not a one-time miracle. It actually goes on. You are saved right then, and you're being saved, and you continue to be saved, and that is the salvation that happens in your life every single day. Over your circumstances, over what is going on, you have been saved, you are saved, and you're being saved, past, present, and future, and we must choose to be part of that every single day. God has always been about life. Hundreds of years before Jesus, he was talking to his people about life. He sent Jesus so that we could have life. And if you want to know why God sent him, you know, John 3:16, so well known, for God so loved the world so much that he gave his only son so that everyone who believes in him will have eternal what? Life. Jesus himself said, I've come that you can have life and have an abundant, amazing life. But let me ask a question. Let me ask the same question to myself. When we have a life-changing message, when it's in our hands, when it's in our heart, when it's on our lips, why aren't we reaching a whole lot more people with the message? Are you prepared to ask that question? Are you prepared to face that question? I said I was going to challenge you this morning. But when we know the message, most of you don't need to do another course to understand the message. Most of us need to do a course in passion. Why aren't we reaching more people? And this is not the pastor speaking over you. This is collectively me saying, why am I not reaching more people? Why am I not having a bigger impact on the people in my world? Why aren't we filling this place three times over a weekend? Why are we not reaching more people? And I believe individually and perhaps collectively, the answer is we end up boring, unadventurous, and inoffensive. Middle of the road people, middle of the road Christians, who are quite happy to sit with middle of the road everything. And it's a sort of a comfortable place to live. It's easy, but it's boring. It's unadventurous, and it's inoffensive. See, Jesus didn't say that your role is to be inoffensive. He didn't say your role is for everybody to agree with your opinion and your place. Jesus actually came in and he shook people's worlds and he started to shake things up. I'm not talking about deliberately going out and picking arguments, but I'm talking about perhaps living with an amount of conviction. Where you're not just going to settle for some things and you're not going to settle for a middle-of-the-road, conservative, boring life. It's just, it's way, 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 I told you I was going to challenge you. There is just way, way, way too much of that across the church. And quite frankly, I don't want us to be that kind of church. I don't want us to be middle of the road. I don't want us to be boring, and I don't want us to be inoffensive. Yeah, I want us to be a church that people know has got conviction. Yeah. A church which is adventurous, church where it's exciting, a church that is filled with love and acceptance and the life-changing power of God, a church where people are coming in all the time because they don't find it. They don't find it boring. They don't find it unadventurous. They find that there is something going on. And how will that happen? That won't happen through me or anybody else on our preaching team preaching more great messages. That will happen through our individual choices. That something collectively changes when we as individuals choose life. The kingdom of God advances as God works through people with conviction. Listen to this verse. It's interesting. And I looked up a lot of interpretations of this verse and different versions of the Bible interpreted in a little bit different ways. But New American Standard's a pretty accurate one. And it says, from the days of John the Baptist until now, the kingdom of heaven suffers violence, and violent men take it by force. And what it's basically saying, it's not telling you to go out and pick up a gun and get on the latest jihad or something like that. What it's actually saying is that the kingdom of God will advance through people with conviction. It will advance through people who have decided that I'm not going to stay in the middle, that I'm actually going to go to a place of conviction and I'm going to start to live out my faith in that place. I'm going to be a person that chooses life. I'm going to be one of those other side sort of followers of Jesus. I'm not going to be a person that's in the middle. Why are we talking about getting to the other side? Because I don't think we get stuck on the start. I think we get stuck in the middle. I think we get stuck in that position in the middle of the road where we're neither one thing or the other. And the Bible's really clear about that. Jesus, when he's speaking to churches in Revelation, when it's like the Son of God, God himself is pouring out his heart to local churches just like this, and he starts to speak into all the stuff that we've seen go on in our church, that we've seen go on in churches across the world, that we've seen go on through history, and he starts to address those things. And there's one where he talks to the church at Laodicea, and he says, oh, I wish you'd make a choice. I wish you'd be either hot or you'd be cold. But at the moment, you're trying to do both things. You're trying to be in the world. You're trying to do this. You're trying to please these people. And you're trying to bring it all together. And actually, you're lukewarm. And you're so lukewarm that I feel sick. It's exactly what he says, because he talks about that lukewarm water, that if you drink lukewarm water, that you want to be sick. And he says, I feel sick and I would spew you out of my mouth. Pretty full-on stuff. And that is the opinion of the Son of God about conservative, middle-of-the-road Christianity. Yeah. I wish you were hot, or I wish you were cold. Sometimes we see people out on the fringes and the edges, and we go, ooh, yeah. But sometimes I think God actually is more encouraged and switched on by their conviction and their passion than he is their weirdness. And I don't want us to be a weird church. I don't want us to be a church full of nut jobs, but I do want us to be passionate. I want us to have conviction. I don't want us here just for the next 20 years doing conservative, middle-of-the-road Christianity. It's not the church I'm going to lead. And it comes with choice. See, I remember we went through a lot of change in this church about the time I joined. It started about 20 years ago. And we saw a church full of fantastic people move and perhaps become less conservative in its approach. And yes, we're a contemporary church, and we're perhaps not that conservative about some of the things we do, but I think sometimes we get very, very conservative in here. And we're happy and we're comfortable and we're happy just to sit back. Let me move on. I've got to go. So how do we move to that place of influence? Because I don't think influence happens from the middle of the road. Who's having the most influence at the moment in Australian politics? It's not the Labor Party. It's not the Liberal Party. It's the Greens. Where do the Greens sit? Do they sit in the middle of the road? No way. that they do stand on their convictions, and they stand on a place, and through a much smaller number of people in Parliament, they're actually affecting policy. The Labor Party this week, as a lot of you would know, actually changed their policy on gay marriage. They chose to actually, even against a Prime Minister who actually said, "I believe that marriage needs to be between a man and a woman," we actually had one of Australia's major political parties, the one that's actually in power at the moment, the one that's in government, say that marriage is actually not between a man and a woman. It can be between two men, two women, whatever you like. And how did that happen? It actually didn't happen through people standing in the middle of the road. It happened through people actually being on the edge and standing on their convictions of what they believed. And I don't believe those convictions are right. But what I am saying, my point this morning is that you will not actually be influencer by walking down the middle of the road. And if we're going to see our city influence, if we're going to see people reach for Jesus, we've actually got to realize that we've got to move from the middle, and we've got to actually get to the edges a little bit sometimes. We don't go down the middle of the road. I think you've got to start to use all the road. I resisted the temptation, but one cycling story. Yesterday morning, I was cycling, I rode up over sort of Fern Tree and then down into Leslie Vale, Longley, and it's this, after you ride up the hill, there's this beautiful, it's about 3 or 4 or 5 k's downhill. And if you want to go fast downhill, if you want to enjoy the freedom of going downhill, you need to use all the road. You've got to find the lines, and motorbike riders and car drivers and people understand this, where you've got to find the apex of the corner, and you've actually got to move from one edge to the other so that you can actually maintain your smoothness and maintain your speed. Now, you know, if we're going to be people of influence, sometimes we've got to find ourselves out on the edge a bit. Sometimes we've got to find ourselves out to the sides a bit, where perhaps it's a bit more dangerous out there. Perhaps there's the chance of running over the edge and getting into the gravel. But that's where we've got to be. That's where we've got to start to live. We've got to be prepared not to just go down the middle, but we've got to use all the road. We've got to go from one side to the other. Paul said that I will be all things so that I can reach some. In other words, you know, there is something, there's a capacity in us to understand people there. We go out and we meet somebody who's not your middle of the road, boring Christian, and we go out there and we can actually understand their world, because we get a big enough mind to start to live in that world, and we don't just associate in that place. Yes, it might be a bit dangerous out there. It mightn't be that cool out there sometimes, but we've got to decide that we're going to use all the road. So as we finish this morning, I'll give you some quick points on how we move from the middle to a place of conviction. Number one, choose today. Talked about that already. Not tomorrow, not sometime in the future. You know, when you put things off, eventually it's easier and easier to live with mediocrity, isn't it? You can talk about that, about all sorts of things, about health, about a problem with alcohol, about a problem with your marriage, whatever it is. The more that we put something off, the easier it is to live with mediocrity. We've got to choose today. If we're going to move from the outside, from the middle of the road to where we're edge, to where we're moving to people of influence and people of conviction, we've got to choose today. It's not about saying, "Oh, gee, that was a good message, and I'm going to start it after I enjoy my Christmas break and enjoy all my Christmas drinks and everything like that, and I'm going to make the choice then." You need to make it right now. Right now, this morning. Number two, how do we move from a place of conviction and influence? Choose who you will serve. I love these verses in Joshua. It says, "But if you refuse to serve the Lord, then choose today whom you will serve. Who would you prefer? The gods of your ancestors you served beyond the Euphrates, or the gods of the Amorites whose land you now live in?" But then he says, "But as for me," this is just before Joshua dies, he says, "But as for me and my family, we will serve the Lord." See, choose who you will serve. I think Bob Dylan actually gets it completely right. And he says, "You might be an ambassador to England or France. You might like to gamble. You might like to dance. You might like to be the heavyweight champion of the world. You might like to be a socialite with a long string of pearls." I love that line. "But you're going to have to serve somebody." Yes, indeed, you're going to have to serve somebody. It might be the devil. It might be the Lord. But you're going to have to serve somebody. And Kev's just bought that on iTunes. So if you want to listen to it, go around to his house. Yeah. Joshua says you're going to have to make a choice who you will serve. And he said there's actually no middle ground. It doesn't exist. You see, if you're not serving God, if you're not living in that place, you're actually living in the other place. You're actually serving the enemy. Either you serve God or you serve the enemy. Number three. Good. That's the last one. Choose who you'll serve with. Choose who you'll serve with. I love what Joshua said. But as for me and my family, we will serve the Lord. The band want to join me, please. We need blokes across this place that can actually stand up and say with that conviction, we're not going to be a middle-of-the-road family, but as for me and my family, we will serve the Lord. I think some of you guys and girls, but I just think this applies to guys because I think this is a decision that sometimes guys have got to make. I'm not talking about who's the boss or anything else. I'm just talking about the way that we're wired and the way that we function. That you actually need to get up in the morning, you need to look at yourself in the mirror, take a long, hard look at yourself, and you need to say, today I choose life, and me and my family, we're going to serve the Lord, because it's not a choice just for you. It's not a choice just for your happiness. It's not just a choice for you doing well. It's a choice for you and your family and your kids and your grandkids and this city and church planting in Nepal, church planting in Ethiopia and Malaysia and China and right across the place. Because when you are prepared to get in the mirror and look at yourself and say with conviction, today I choose, me and my family, we will choose the Lord. It's just so powerful about who you do it with. I was talking to a guy this week, and he was telling me about sharing the gospel, and he perhaps even wasn't sharing the gospel, but somebody actually took offense to what he was saying. He was, you know, they were saying, oh, you know, you shouldn't be doing all this God bothering in the workplace and all this stuff, and it was obvious somebody had a bit of a beef with it. But I started to think about that, and I thought, well, you're actually, it's who you serve with. You see, when you're out there, when you're sharing that, when your life is being an influence in the workplace or wherever you are, you don't do it alone. You've got your whole church family with you. You've got somebody else that's actually praying with you as you mix it with the people in your world. You don't do it alone. Let's choose who we'll serve with. God doesn't want lone rangers. He doesn't want people out there all on their own. He wants people to say that for me and my family, me and my church family, me and my own family, me and the people in my world, don't you love the grammar? We will serve the Lord. At Energize a Life Church, we will serve the Lord. Myself and my Energizer family, we will serve the Lord. When you're out there, when you're doing what you're doing, you're not doing it alone. You're doing it as part of a collective group of people who have individually made choices to choose life, and together, collectively, we make an impact across this city. Come on, let's stand up. As we worship, or as we praise, whatever you got planned, let's come on. Let's decide this morning we're going to choose life. Let's choose life. I'll be back in just a sec because I'm going to take 2 more minutes to give people the opportunity, if you haven't met Jesus yet, to actually find him this morning. And it's about a choice. It's about choosing.